Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 10, Close Rick Counters of the Rick Kind. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Rick is shockingly killed by a visually coded as evil Rick and Morty over breakfast. The good news is it's not our Rick, but our Rick is brought in by the Council of Ricks on suspicion of serial Rickicide. Rick escapes from the council fugitive style and is forced to investigate the crimes to discover the real Rick responsible. After a struggle where our Morty is instrumental in freeing our Rick from the clutches of evil Rick, it's revealed that evil Rick was being remotely manipulated by a sophisticated cyber receiver. As all the orphan Mortys of the murdered Ricks are loaded onto starships for transport, we see evil Morty take off his eye patch, which was hiding a sophisticated cyber transmitter. Meanwhile, as a detachment of Ricks sets up shop in a Smith household in an effort to apprehend our Rick, Jerry forms an unlikely bond with the decidedly un-Rick-like Rick.
All right, Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I mean, I don't know if this is my favorite episode of the season, but it's like the episode as far as setting off massive far-reaching plots with consequence. Like it's one of the handful episodes that really expanded the world, and this is like felt like maybe it didn't expand the world, but it like started to pay off some of the logical conclusions of the world they've already built, establishing the Council of Ricks, the concepts of the Rickus Rick, exploring what it means to be Rick through the prism of our Rick, the Council of Ricks, Doofus Rick, and what it means to, and consequently what it means to be Morty. It's very entertaining, like the idea of the mega shield of Morty's psychically shielding the evil Rick, I thought was pretty brilliant and funny in execution and concept.
Yeah.
We got to see like, you know, Morty kind of succeed and save Rick in a kind of reversal of their typical roles, and it's a lot of fun, and it promises to be a lot of fun in the future. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that, and I think this would have been, in all honesty, an excellent season finale. I know there's one more episode after this, which who knows what's going to happen in that one, but this is a big moment for Rick and Morty, in my opinion. Yeah. It's as big as you know, Rick Potion number 9, where they abandon their universe and take up residence in a new one, or dimension rather. Yeah, and I think it's, I do think it sort of expands the universe of Rick and Morty.
Sure.
I think, yeah, it does. There are some inferences that we could have made before, but the idea that there's a Council of Ricks, and sort of, you know, the idea was out there that there are an infinite number of Ricks, but to see sort of the variations on that, that there are in fact variations on that, that Ricks consider Rick, and where those lines are drawn, I think, yeah, sort of expands our understanding of this universe.
Yeah, I mean, this is as big a deal to Rick and Morty universe as like the first appearance of the cigarette smoking man is on the X-Files universe. Like, it's something that sets it apart from like a monster of the week, or sets it apart from like your half hour animated TV show that's just a purely episode, or yeah, is it? No, it's purely, what is it? Episodic versus serialized.
Yeah.
This kind of like winningly hybrid blend where there is, you know, you do have like, you know, a certain amount of lack of continuity where everything kind of snaps back into shape in time for the next adventure. But you also have these kind of like longer arcing plots. And, you know, it's to borrow Rick and Morty parlance, it's this stuff like that's really gets the fans dicks hard.
Yeah, it's extremely satisfying.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The week-to-week stuff is great, but I, as something that can kind of hang together as a whole, this type of episode really brings it all together.
Yeah, this is why, like, this is one of the reasons why it's inspired a particularly rabid fan base, because it's not just really funny and really thought provoking, but it also is just like one of the more fertile grounds for fan theories and speculations. And it seems like when we're talking about all the different podcasts we've done, you know, the Westworlds, the Game of Thrones, the True Detect, the ones that actually encourage you, like, oh, I've got the puzzle box ones.
Yeah.
they always are ones that really sink their hooks into the fans. So.
I think there's a bit of a love-hate relationship going on between the writers and the fandoms and that concept.
I don't doubt it, because it's fucking, like, it's all fun and games while you're building the puzzle box, but then when you open it and give the answer, that's where... You know, you just where the fans decide whether the last 10 years have been worth it or total bullshit. Uh-huh. And you take your best shot, but you're trying to play a game against, 100 million crazy people on the internet.
Yep.
And I don't envy anyone that tries to gamble those odds. I'm glad I'm just the one passing in judgment of it.
Absolutely.
Our jobs are way easier. This episode is super big to get our arms around. Where do you want to begin?
Let's start with the smaller pieces, because the bigger pieces, we'll have to work our way up to those. Doofus Rick. Okay. I have so many questions about Doofus Rick. A, is Doofus Rick actually a doofus? Because the number one question that stood out to me as I was considering whether or not Doofus Rick is actually a doofus is whether I think Rick, the Royal Rick, is a bully.
Hmm.
And I think emphatically my answer is yes. He certainly can be.
Yeah.
And so when I look at Doofus Rick, I don't see him doing anything that's particularly doofusy. What I see is a bunch of other Ricks pointing at him and saying, this guy's a doofus. He eats his own shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, which he vigorously denies, but then again, uh-huh. he does have a no-bake brownie recipe that
yeah,
could be
there's a lot of consternation
suspiciously shit-like in consistency, if not in taste and smell.
And the fact that Jerry enjoys them doesn't really
answer
that question.
Yeah, Jerry might be one of those guys that's totally in on the shit-eating dimension.
Uh-huh.
Fans have speculated that perhaps Doofus Rick is from the shit-eating dimension. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't think so. I think you're right that there's some kind of... some quirk about this guy that also made him very lonely, because this is one of the unique features of this Rick is he never got married. So this Rick doesn't have a Beth. This Rick doesn't have a Jerry. Mm-hmm. Importantly, this Rick doesn't have a Morty. And, kind of being lonely in the universe seems like it made him more kind and empathetic and... Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I would believe that he's not the smartest of Ricks, but the man did whip up a no-bake brownie recipe out of test tubes full of chemicals.
Yeah, how dumb can he really be?
He's smarter than me.
For sure.
He's smarter than all of Earth scientists who this technology has so far eluded. So that puts him on, and he's on the Rick scale. But what I think is really interesting to go to your core answer is that, or your core question, is they introduce this concept called the central finite curve, which I think is the writer's way of acknowledging that there is an infinite possibilities in this universe, mm-hmm. and not all universes have a Rick, okay? But the central finite curve is like the section of infinity that has all the permutations of Ricks and all the permutations of Mortys. And I think it's interesting that like our Rick is C137 Rick, right? Doofus Rick is J19 Zeta 7. And so
could you possibly be going with the monikers?
This is a wild ass guess, but I haven't seen it really explored in the fandom. Like, is that an indication that because we know our Rick is kind of close to like the prime part of the central curve because, he's very similar in look and temperament to the other Ricks. In fact, he's like one Rick away from the evilest Rick. And I'm just going with this, you got C137 and then you got J19 Zeta 7. Like all the different prefixes and suffix indicate that this Rick is pretty far off, pretty lots of different standard deviations off that standard finite curve.
Sure. Yeah.
So like it could be that, when you get that far off of an outlier of all the different things, inferences of making are true that, maybe he isn't as smart, and the other thing is like, maybe he's very smart, but in different ways, like maybe his emotional intelligence mm-hmm. quotient is off the charts.
Sure.
But I don't know because Jerry's such a genuinely kind of terrible person in his own right and has so many bad qualities that, empathizing with him kind of indicates that he's a bit of a dum-dum too.
Yeah, I found myself examining that relationship and thinking, so if Jerry, if Rick were dumber, or at least less concerned with showing how intelligent he is and demonstrating that to Jerry, then they would be friends, right? Like, but Jerry is so damn insecure about really everything. I mean, it's a defining characteristic, but his intelligence specifically around Rick, that neither one of them can be friends, be civil to each other.
It could be a very unique circumstance that, like, it's the fact that they both have a shared common history of being bullied by Ricks. Mm-hmm. So, and he doesn't have enough time to spend around Jerry to, like, get the idea that, you know, to see all of Jerry's shortcomings, and Jerry doesn't get to spend enough time around Doofus Rick to see his shortcomings. So it's like they got this mutual admiration society, and maybe if Doofus Rick was to be around Jerry for a month, he'd be tired of him or... but like their relief at like, oh, you're a Rick that's not going to bully me. Oh, you're a being in the universe that's not going to bully me, make me feel less than. That's seems like the basis of their friendship.
Or my other big question about Doofus Rick: why the hell did they bring him on this mission?
I mean, I think that goes back to Rick's bullying streak, because like there's a really great line where Morty and Rick are on the run, and Rick says like, you know, they're gonna the Ricks are gonna spend a couple hours bullying or tormenting Jerry because they just can't help themselves, but after that they're gonna like if the Ricks got down to business, they'd find them right away, but they're gonna be distracted by bully. So like, and like the unique circumstance of being able to bully Jerry with multiple Ricks around, I wonder if like they really bring Doofus Rick just as like, well, what if Jerry's at work that day? We gotta have some, you know, like
because
like
a punching bag. Yeah,
it's kind of like, oh, like, you know, in the Parks and Rec, how Jerry's character was like the office whipping boy, and when he like was out of commission for a while, they started started persecuting Tom.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that the nature of the Ricks is that, like, there's not an obvious target for bullying around. They'll turn on themselves and, like, ooh, that could get...
Okay.
You know, it's one thing for, you know, to have a proxy war between the United States and USSR fought in Afghanistan or Vietnam, but, like, it gets scary when they square off together.
Gotcha.
Like, yeah, Jerry's Vietnam.
Yeah.
And the Ricks are the superpowers. Actually.
For sure.
It's a self-preservation thing.
All right.
Another fascinating concept, and I think we actually, in one of our mini pre-this kind of comprehensive coverage of Rick and Morty, when we were just talking about in passing on, like, Bald Move TV, I remember asking you the concept of, like, what do you think about the Rickest Rick or Mortiest Morty, or, like, what would the Jimmest Jim look like in a universe of infinite possibilities of you? And I still, like, I don't know that I have an answer to that, but it's a really thought-provoking question. The fact of, like, if given an infinite universes of yourself, infinite permutations of yourself, could you pluck from all that set a singular, like, your best self? Or would there be essentially an infinite version of your best selves?
Yep, that's where I'm headed, because I don't think, like, it's all about perspective, and I think every different Jim would have a different perspective on what the Jimmest Jim is. I don't know that this concept holds up to the concept of the Rickest Rick holds up to infinity.
When you talk about the Council of Ricks, which is a great idea, it's a fantastic idea, I love it. Mm-hmm. But like, it makes you wonder about like the bootlicker Ricks, because one of the core definitions of Rick is that they don't respect authority.
Yeah.
So like, who are the Ricks that are like the police Ricks? Who are the like the pig Ricks, as they call them in here? The ruling council of Ricks. Like, how did they get elected? Why is their hair and facial hair so like? Why
this is where comedy and logic break down. We are at the intersection of. Uh-huh. Of those two things that just breaks everything, because you're right. A true Rick, the Rickest Rick, even to be defined as a Rick, I think, in my opinion, has to have some sort of anti-authoritative streak.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, you got the Justice League of America, right? And then you got the Legion of Doom. Is the Legion of Doom the opposite of the Justice League? Because the Legion of Doom implies that they are capable of working under a hierarchy with rules and cooperation. Like, the opposite of the Justice League.
The Legion of Anarchy never got off the ground.
Right. The opposite of, like, the Justice League would probably be, like, some kind of renegade, just total out for themselves, like, you know, like singular malevolent force. And I'm I'm wondering like if there's a similar type of dichotomy where, because I was thinking like, okay, if you got a council of Ricks and they're kind of like this, you know, wet blanket force of the Rick universe, like could there be like the Legion of Doom Ricks where it's like, oh, these are all the renegade Ricks and they'd band together. But like, that's kind of gets in like the horseshoe political theory where it's like, if you warp far enough to the left, you come back around to be like fascism. And if you go too far, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, the Rickest Rick has to be a singular thing by definition. So he couldn't ever possibly team up with any other Ricks. And so like, how does that Rick?
And if you judge by that standard, I think our Rick is doing pretty well at being a Rick.
Yeah. And there was also, he wasn't the only one though, right? Cause you had like the scientist formerly known as Rick and all the other murdered Ricks that were like these singular people. I just wonder like, but that begs the question, how can Rick ever win? Like, if there is going to be a winner or a loser, how does he ever, like, long-term win against the infinite Ricks that are willing to...
Yeah.
They're slightly less Rick than him, but that less than allows them to band together and work effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Is the Rickest Rick, like, so much better than the next Rick in line that he can just effortlessly beat them with his individuality and...
It's a good question, creativity. Especially when sort of lined up and compared, you know, in a list, much like Evil Rick does here.
So they you show Evil Rick kind of lining up all the Ricks from the other dimensions by evality, but like mm-hmm. by the nature of infinity, couldn't you take any two arbitrary Ricks along that point and say that there's an infinite amount of Ricks in between that?
Sure. This is why I don't believe in evolution.
Because why? Okay.
Show me the missing Rick.
Oh, I see. Yes, yes. Well, you need to pick up the punctured equorickium theory of evolution as popularized by Stephen J. Rick.
Hey, do I need to put the footnote that was sarcasm? Okay.
Bolded slash S
yeah,
for that last statement.
For sure.
Can we talk about the idea of Morty's being a camouflage for Rick?
Oh man, I love this.
This is gotta be cribbed off the old, like in the, you know, the expanded universe Star Wars books, like the explanation for why Yoda mm-hmm. lived on Dagobah is because that dark side cave was like a negative and he was a positive, and when you looked at him from a distance they equaled out to zero.
Mm-hmm.
So Rick's brilliance is canceled out by Morty's stupidity.
I have a perhaps controversial alternative theory that would render Rick's explanation completely debunked.
Okay.
So
Morty's everywhere tuning in with rapt attention.
Listen up, Morty's. So there's a joke, and it's obviously a joke, and I don't know, you know, I've got to read more into this because I'm podcasting about Rick and Morty,
mm-hmm.
Where Rick says essentially that this dome of Morty's is inefficient. He can do the same with five Mortys and a jumper cable.
Right.
There's an implication there that it is the pain of the Morty that is actually camouflaging Rick's intelligence.
Interesting.
Because electrocution is what he's talking about, and that would presumably cause more pain than getting stabbed in the side.
Uh-huh.
And if you can do it with less Mortys and just amplify the pain, it's the pain that actually camouflages him. So every time Rick takes Morty on an adventure and he, you know, fucking breaks his legs or he suffers some emotional pain.
I was
going to
say, like, the emotional pain is constant.
Right, right. You could say that Rick is camouflaging himself from the other Ricks.
Because you're right. Like, if it was just their stupidity, you wouldn't have to torture them. You could just literally have them, the Mortys in.
Put them in that room and, just have all the Mortys there congregated. It's actually their pain that camouflages Rick.
Yeah, you could hook them up at like Matrix style to where like they're living in a perfect Morty simulation of making out with Jessica, and then they're easy to control and mm-hmm. they don't. But that's, I don't see anything wrong with
the,
that.
The thing wrong with it is they're obviously just making a fucking joke.
Well, but here's the thing. It's like, okay, like let's try to take it serious though.
Okay.
Because like, it's almost like, because I can see the opposite objection will be, well, then Rick is wrong in his own theory of like why Morty's are the armor. But
mm-hmm.
if he told Morty that truth, it would actually lessen his emotional pain and make him a less effective shield, right?
Like, it could.
He says like, it's, you know, it's not just dumb. It's just that your psychic suffering is what masks us. Like, number one, it would blow up. It would effectively make Morty harder to work with Rick, you know, because it's like, uh-huh. it's already had him semi-rebel just the fact that, like, Rick bluntly stated, like, look, you're stupid, I'm smart. And I also thought it was that, you know, we go back and forth about Rick and caring for his family. Like, this is a pretty sensitive way for Rick to broach the subject. Like, he went out of his way to not punch Morty in the face with, like, look, kid, you're stupid. And he's just like, you're just unfathomably stupid, and I'm unimaginably smart, and that's what it is. Until, like, Morty kind of got his back up, and he's like, okay, yeah, let me explain why you're an impenetrable suit of human armor, because, yeah, no, I like the gym theory of pain.
I mean, it just checks out.
I think it's unassailable.
For sure.
Where I'm going to delete all this bullshit in the Rick and Morty wiki and
just
and,
put it the pain.
Yeah.
To the pain.
It's just the pain. It's just the pain. A couple like personality notes or character development notes. I liked that Beth is, when with all the Ricks squatting in her house, like Beth is kind of in heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Like she's just mainlining all this affection and attention from the Ricks and, you know, the Ricks are all doing that thing where they're kind of facetiously complimenting her, but she's eating it up. She attempts a fart or no, a belch.
She gets in on the action.
She gets in on the action. I thought that was fun. Also, we're going to get deep into the spoiler section and some of these theories, but without going into that, evil Rick's plan was to go through Rick's memories, absorb them all somehow, or catalog them, and then kill him. And we see these him going through all these memories, and he gets to one where, you know, he's picking up Morty and bouncing him as a baby boy, and Rick actually gets tears in his eyes. Those are genuine tears, right? He says it's because I'm allergic to dipshits, which, you know, that's what Rick would do. But, like,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, we're going to keep doing this bit, but, like, the answer is pretty clear that Rick does have an affection for his family.
Yeah, he's got to.
Yeah. Again, like whether that spans, like maybe it's just singularly focused on Rick and maybe like there's an outward stretching concern that envelops like kind of Beth and Summer and outer orbits. And then way, 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 way out in the Pluto irregular orbit is maybe Jerry. Sometimes he drifts closer to the son of Rick and sometimes he goes spins out into the Jupiter belt. But this is solid. I mean, we actually see a genuine show of emotion from Rick. So case closed.
Yeah.
There's a couple other kind of funny things here. Like I love the multi-dimensional jumping where you go through the greasy grandma dimension and then you go through, I can't even say like it's, you go through a phone dimension where they're ordering pizzas with chairs on them and you go through a chair dimension where they're ordering pizzas with phones on them and then the people are chairs and chairs are people. But I like at the where they get to the chair dimension and the Council of Rick show up or the Rick squad shows up and they're like, just to make everything easy, we're gonna put red X's on our foreheads. Which there's a little bit of a gag at the end there, but the next scene we see evil Rick is living on a planet with a literal red X. Like it's got red Saturn rings that are intersecting, and I thought that was kind of like It seems like the universal way of a Rick identifying itself is to put a red X on it, and then you've got the evil Rick setting up at a headquarters. It's marked with a giant red X.
That's
I thought
funny.
That was a very, very fast and funny kind of visual gag.
Speaking of dimensions, this is where I regret the whole idea of keeping a dimension watch.
Jesus, yeah.
Because there are countless Mortys, countless Ricks. I think the whole thing falls apart here, and we probably just need to stop.
Yeah,
we probably just need to give up.
There's a link to the Wikipedia that will try as best as anyone can to catalog all these dimensions. But when you were starting this fool's errand, I'm like, but what's he going to do? There's some episodes in the future that's literally just Rick running through various dimensions, and hell, we can't even tell they're just in a planet in a dimension. And
yeah,
so
I knew it would come to this eventually, but it was fun while it lasted.
Well, you got like 91%. Or 87% through the season one before you gave up. So
yeah,
I'll take it. You did better than Rick. Like Rick made it 5 minutes into a plot before he burnt the whole thing down. That shows some real staying power. And then the last kind of like rule, the new rule they added with the Rickest Rick and the Mortiest Morty, like Rick cautions, you know, Morty about, hey, if you get a cocky Morty, it can lead to some real big problems. I'll explain when you're over, which is literally, you can hear the writer's room punting to future seasons on that.
Yeah.
And it smashes cuts to evil Morty. I'm really interested to see like what a cocky Morty is and like what that means from a Rick's perspective and what it actually means with the rubber on the when the rubber hits the road. Which we'll get to, and we're going to take some stabs at that in the plot to the future section.
Last thing that I feel like I need to talk about here is, importantly, in an infinite universe, I think the implication from the idea of Rickest Rick and a Mortiest Morty is that there might also be a Rickest Morty and a Mortiest Rick.
Mm.
And maybe that's what we're seeing in Evil Morty.
Mm.
Maybe he is so much like Rick as we think of him,
yeah,
that he's the Rickest Morty.
It's like one of those political axes where you've got like authoritarian and like, you know, whatever. You got a Rick axis and a Morty axis.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah, four quadrants. You're going to get all the combinations.
Yeah, that also would logically imply that there's a Rick that's simultaneously the Rickest Rick and Mortiest Morty.
Because
he's pegged on both axes. And then you've got one axis that's like the least Rick Rick and also the least Morty Morty.
Mm-hmm.
All in one body.
That's
like
just Jerry.
That's the. I was going to say, like, that's a real alpha and the omega there.
You know, maybe I don't connect because I'm the Rickest Rick there is. And, you know, it would go without saying that the Rickest Rick would have the Mortiest Morty.
It would go without saying, huh?
Yeah, it would. Did you hear me say it?
Nah.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga-sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, Jim, enough stalling. It's time for us to get our portal guns out, tuned to Dimension BM-77 to access behind-the-scenes details, trivias, and spoilers for future episodes. Since this is a Myth Arc episode, buckle up. Actually, it's not going to be that bad because we – or at least I did when I was looking at the when I was looking at speculation and like theories on this episode, I – was able to confine my searches for things that are kind of contemporary to this season.
Okay.
So I was looking at, like, you know, using some of the my Reddit search foo to, like, limit things that, like, were three plus years ago, four plus years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, there obviously there's a continuation of this plot in other seasons, most notably the last counts of Rick, the last Citadel of Rick's episode we saw with, like, the training day stuff and evil Morty winning an election.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to season three, when we get to that episode, we're going to go for broke on trying to, like, do an exhaustive kind of review of, like, all the different theories and stuff. But what do you, having said all that, how do you want to open with this? Do you want to start there? Do you want to start with some of the commentary stuff?
No, I mean, we can start there. I think the I was reading around on Reddit too, and one of the contemporary theories, the whole idea behind this is maybe the Morty that we know in our current universe, like C-137 Morty, might actually be evil Morty. Sort of maybe time travel, but more likely come through from another dimension. Like he's been, you know, because Rick talks about having traveled to future dimensions and stuff like that, or spent time in the future. So you could conceivably have a Rick having persecuted our Morty so much that he's turned evil.
Mm.
He's kind of learned, you know, what kind of person Rick is, and he's coming back to destroy him.
This is kind of the problem with a lot of this, and I'm very curious to see how they end up squaring a circle, but we know from the commentaries of the season that the showrunners have decided to set this in kind of like a Simpson-esque timelessness, where, like, you know,
yeah,
in The Simpsons, Bart and Lisa can be off for summer vacation and they go back to school, but they didn't age a year. Like, mm, they're on this continual treadmill where they're all, you know, Bart's always going to be like a 12-year-old and Lisa's always going to be like a 10-year-old and Lisa's always going to be a baby. Even 20 years into it. But this theory seems to require, like, real passage of time, right? Because, like,
evolution of character, which I don't know is the same.
Okay.
But I think, so I know after listening to many commentaries that the creators have a sort of love-hate relationship with this thing that they're creating and the fandom. Because
sure,
the fandom, you know, Dan describes them as, like, piranha-like, where they go in and they think about the episode for 3 days, pick everything apart.
Right.
And I sort of think they got into trouble a little bit, and they should have avoided giving specific ages, specific amounts of time. If you just say, you know, Morty is a kid,
mm-hmm,
and Rick's been gone for a long time,
mm-hmm,
you can kind of avoid a lot of this piranha-like behavior where you can pick at very specific references and I feel like they made a mistake in giving actual specific numbers. Like, Morty is 14, Rick's been gone for 20 years.
Right. But it's like kind of like but those limitations also make things interesting, because, like, I've often maintained that, like, one of the problems that, like, fantasy series get into, unless they rigidly define, like, the rules of their magical system, it's like you run into, and there's a little bit of this, like, even in a series I admire, like Harry Potter, whereas, like, J.K. Rowling was clearly pulling shit out of her ass in the latter half of those, at least in my opinion, where it's like, oh, it turns out if you have two wands that have the same core and they go oppose each other, like, it spontaneously ejects, like, the last X spells that they cast or some shit like that. Like, that mm-hmm, wasn't a rule in the first Harry Potter book.
Sure.
McGonagall wasn't teaching that in Hogwarts. What the fuck? But then also you can get in this case where, like, the rules of the universe are so rigid that it doesn't allow for anything surprising or interesting to happen.
Sure, yeah.
And if they went with, like, well, you know, everything's arbitrary, nothing's real, then, like, you can't, you know, like, a lot of these puzzle box, these mystery box things tend to deal with, like, things that happened long ago that, you know, that then pay off, because you need that kind of amount of time to tell a real conspiracy, right? Like, you know, the next time we see evil Morty, yeah, when he has consolidated his power. But it's so bizarre because, like, in the future episode where we've got, like, a training day Morty and he's, like, hard-boiled and he's got a pot belly and he's been on the job for, I don't know, has he been on the job a month, 6 years?
Yeah, who knows?
It's impossible to say. And you've got, like, different Ricks. Like, it's like, if these are all Ricks and all Ricks are, like, 65 years old and all Mortys are 14 years old, how can some Mortys have so much more experience or be so much more hard-bitten? Or these? Well, I guess in an infinite amount of Ricks, maybe the answer is there's some Ricks that never went away from their family.
Sure.
So they've been like some of these Mortys have been like on these adventures since they've been 5 years old, or maybe even from infancy. Like imagine a dimension where Jerry and Beth die in a car accident when Morty's 6 months old and Rick adopts him and takes him. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's a Morty's been raised by Birdman. Like
there's no limiter on that throttle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, Jesus.
Yeah, but it almost feels like they want their cake and eat it too.
But
that
they
kind
built
of thing.
A world that a lot like they build a world that essentially is Katie barred a door already, because you've got all infinite dimensions, infinite realities, and also they've got ageless. Their characters are essentially ageless, so like there's already so many outs they could take to, you know. I guess their big fear is like they're going to have to eventually, if they want to pay this evil Morty plotline off in a satisfying way, they're going to have to pick a lane and go there. But when they do that, then they're vulnerable to the piranhas.
Right. And that's the thing that I feel like risks a reputation of a show within a fandom. Like if you don't honor what the fans are constructing in their own canon of your show, sometimes that can turn the fans against you.
Yeah, because sometimes they decide that they, even though, like, if you could step outside and objectively say, okay, the way the show ended was not what the fans expected, but it's not necessarily worse. It's just that everyone fell in love with this particular fan theory. Mm-hmm. People can really turn on you on that.
And it's absolutely a double-edged sword, because people can turn on you if you pay that off too closely to what they thought, too.
Right.
But like, that's, you know,
it's because I read a little bit of that Rickus Rick theory, and like one of its kind of one of his linchpins is this scene, or like there's this and I haven't fact checked some of these statements, but
yeah.
They said that you know, Rick left his family like 20 years ago, but there's an image when you're looking through Rick's memory of him bouncing Morty on his knee, so like oh, that must have been a Morty that was born 20 years ago, and maybe evil Morty's 20 years old. But like, I guess my problem with that is, you know, like Rick can be gone from the family and maybe show up for the birth of Morty or 3 months later just to see his grandson and then take off again. And that's not like being back on our lives. That's just him, like, you know, flying in and then flying back out. And also, like, what does that even mean? Like, if evil Morty's 20 years old, he doesn't look like he's 20.
Sure.
So, but I feel like it's like there's this weird mesh where they're trying to use the fact that these people are ageless, but they can also experience time. And what I think you're supposed to understand is, like, you know how light can slow down when it hits like a crystal? Like, the speed of light slows in certain mediums. Like, that's what these characters are doing. Like, there's time elapsing, but it goes at a very, very slow period.
But my opinion on this is, you're not supposed to think about it this hard.
There's
it's
also
chill
that.
The fuck out, internet. That's what I think.
There's also
and you know, I have to admit my own culpability in all of this, because look, we're talking about it, right? We're propping this dissection of it up.
Right.
So yeah, I mean,
you and I grew up,
I'm not an innocent.
You and I grew up fantasizing and debating what it meant that Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker fought on the rim of a volcano after being friends in the Clone Wars. Like, there was like three sentences that we were building entire worlds off of, and then George Lucas disappointed us all with the prequel trilogy. with apologies to all the millennials and zoomers among us who unironically love the prequels.
Jesus Christ.
You're allowed.
I might have too if I saw them when I was 3 years old.
I don't want to take away anyone's joy, but so this brings me to like the Mortius Morty theory that was something came up with by a Redditor called The Fargo. And his theory is that this Morty, we call him evil Morty, but he's actually a good Morty that was saddled with a truly evil Rick.
Okay, this sounds very similar to the Rick Master Theory thing.
So this is where like this Morty defeats him some way and is able to, like, you know, cyber engineer his brain. There's a lot of handling, because like, how the fuck could a Morty possibly do this? But he is.
But if he's the Rickest Morty,
maybe this leads up to the, like, Morty's doing all this testing, and his theory is he's trying to find the Ricks that actually care about the Morty, because that's the Ricks that he can work with. So I don't know, like. I kind of like this, and this theory I think is also compatible with what we know from season 3, where this quote unquote evil Morty is trying to consolidate power of the Ricks. Because once you've identified like the dividing line of good and bad Ricks, then the next step is to purge the evil Ricks, which you know, Rick did a damn fine job of like really decimating the Council of Ricks when he teleported them into the heart of the Galactic Empire,
yeah,
or Federation. And then you would want to consolidate power to, like, you know, start reshaping the world of Ricks in your own image.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that this isn't evil Morty. He's like almost like an Ozymandias from The Watchmen Morty. Maybe you don't agree with his methods, but his end result is kind of laudable. But that, I guess that goes to how you feel about the ending of The Watchmen, too.
Sure.
Okay, so we did a lot of the lore, and again, we'll do more in-depth coverage in Season 3 when we get a chance to kind of slow down and spend a little bit more time researching this. You alluded to this early on in the episode, the fact that there's a that, you know, we praised how well they've paced the release of these episodes,
mm-hmm.
and even the showrunners themselves seemed like they agreed that, like, we kind of screwed the pooch by not having this to be the finale. And it seemed like the only reason they wanted it, they didn't, because they had in this, in like two-parter, like true cliffhanger that they would pay off, and like it seemed like they were even struggling to, like, why did we do that? Like, it seems like this is like it, like if yeah. you ended, if you fade to black on Evil Morty boarding the transport, you know, people would be fucking losing their mind. And maybe also, like, the regret is that if you're just a fan watching this as they come out and you see this episode and there's one more, like, oh, there's no way that they don't pay this off.
Yeah.
And then you go to some completely random two-parter adventure that's like, I don't know, it's almost like in Star Trek Season 3, what if you had the best of both worlds part one, and it's not the finale, there's another episode where it's just Luoxana fucking right. around a Troy. Like, the fans would fucking lose their mind.
Yeah, I think this next episode, 111, Rixie Business, would have been much better suited for, like, maybe between this episode and Something Ricked This Way Comes.
Hmm.
Like, between the Devil episode.
They could do a two-parter, just like in the middle of the season, you know?
Yeah. Because, I mean, this is almost wholly unconnected, right? Rixie Business.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
a big party, so, like...
It's just a party, there's... Yeah, I don't know. It's almost like one of those things where, like, the desire to be that episodic kind of formulaic maybe bit them in the ass, because that's like what you do mm. when you're writing, like, you know, television shows, is you end the season on like a two-parter, like, you know, stay yeah. tuned for the next one. And they weren't clearly ready to advance this plot, because this, like, I think they also know that this is they're playing with they're playing with antimatter here. Like, this is one of the coolest episodes of Rick and Morty, and it's got people's fans, it's got the fans' imagination on fire, but it's also, like, one of those things where, as we pointed out in this episode, there's many, many pitfalls that you could fall into. So it's like, you know, I don't know, but maybe it's also one of the things where you're in it, like, you don't realize what kind of lightning you had in the bottle until you see the fans' reaction
sure,
to it.
Could be.
You know, maybe, like, they were afraid, like, oh, maybe people won't like the continuity, or people, like, what is that? We thought,
I mean,
Rick...
they've had such an accurate read on it, though. Like, they knew the Cronenberg one was going to be big. They kind of shifted that around in the season to make it work. I feel mm-hmm. like they could have known, and probably did know, what they had here.
Mm-hmm. There's also this Easter egg on the Dodo world, when they're in the Dodo dimension. One of the many portals that Rick's opens up, there's like this random collection of objects that comes shitting through the one of the portals. And that is, there's an episode of Gravity Falls, which is another animated show on the Cartoon Network. The episode Society of the Blind Eye, one of the episode's ending credit gags reveals that one of the characters loses these same three exact items through his interdimensional portal.
Hmm.
So Justin Roiland's good friends with the showrunner of that, Alex Hirsch. And I think that I read an interview that there was a plan to kind of have this, like, subtle continuity between these two programs where, you know, like, you'd see a character in the background that kind of suggests that they are, and maybe there'd be room for an epic crossover eventually. It seems like in the fullness of time, that's just hard to do, to coordinate two different writers' rooms to work on a project once, and, like,
I'm sure.
how that fucks the continuity. And they're like, oh, we got, it seems like they've moved away from that, but it was a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when they build those kind of continuities. But there's also in episode Total Recall next season, that's the one where the parasites, or the mind parasites, are running and making all these crazy characters, and And Rick says, I've got about 1,000 memories of you, and only 6 of them are pleasant to Morty. It so happens that, like, there's exactly 6 memories of Morty that the evil Morty was going through here. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the thing is, like, I think that's kind of cool, but when I was cataloging the actual memories, one of them was Morty being electrocuted through his fingertips. One of them was Morty frantically running from a monster. It looks like it's about to eat him. Then the others are pretty benign. Like, one of them is smiling in Rick's flying car. Like, maybe it's the first day he took him up in the saucer. One is Rick giving Morty the love serum, which is that a pleasant memory? One of them's Morty handing him his flask. It looks like Rick's point of view is him passed out on the floor. Again, maybe that's happy to Rick. And then one of them is him bouncing him as a baby. So I don't know. I would love to. What is the pleasant memory of Morty being electrocuted through his fingerprints? Is that's the sadistic side of Rick?
Yeah.
Right?
How do you define pleasant memory for Rick?
That's the bully side of him. I think that's all for the commentary with Justin, Dan, and the other showrunners. There was another a commentary by Ken Osborne and Pendleton Ward.
I'll confess to not listening to this after the experience with Robert Kirkman and
it broke you,
Scott Gimple. I couldn't listen to another guest interview.
So these are the guys that are the principals behind Adventure Time. And it's another one of those things where they just express admiration, and they multiple times found themselves like getting like caught into watching the cartoon rather than doing commentary. But there's a couple of, I thought, things that were interesting, that one of them actually did talk to a physicist about, like, the alternate universes and, you know, like, when, because I think the Star Trek understanding of alternate universes is, like, you know, you have the desire to, like, chew a piece of bubblegum. And once you make that choice, there's also a split from the universe where you didn't eat the chewing gum, right? You didn't make the chewing gum. And Pendleton Ward asked this guy, like, when does it actually happen? Is like when you physically make the choice or when you mentally decide? And the physicist said, well, in multiverse theory, alternate universes split every time there's a quantum event.
Sure. That makes sense.
So every time, like, something experiences radioactive decay, every time a quark spins counterclockwise versus clockwise, that literally melted my brain. Because I could almost get behind the idea of, like, every time a physical reaction occurs in the universe, like, the opposite thing happens. But, like, there's so many fucking quantum events.
Yeah, it's innumerable.
Literally. It's infinity. You start thinking about that and your brain runs out your ear.
Sure.
So yeah, I think I'm gonna forget that and go back to my Star Trek understanding where I can just grasp it. And then he also said something interesting about they were pondering about like why watching a character so evil as Rick is fun, and like, you know, why is it fun to watch Tony Montana like kill a bunch of people? Why is it fun to watch Walter White? You know, and they're like, he said something I thought was insightful, which is it doesn't matter if characters are good or evil. If a character is having a good time and are triumphing, like, you kind of want to have a good time and go along with it. And some of the creative tension is like when you are forced to confront the fact that them having a good time entails other people having a bad time. And I was thinking, it's like, you know, like,
okay, because like, that was going to be my natural question.
Yeah.
Is if the bad guy is having a good time, how can I ever judge him for it then?
Right. Yeah. No, it's like, you know, it's interesting because it like also explains a lot of like human nature, like why people go along with mob mentality and like what is the thing that makes a person like sicken and turn away? You know, it's like with Walter White, it's like he's super cool and you like seeing him do bad things to bad people. But oh my God, did he just put an 11-year-old in a tub of acid? Holy shit. I don't know how I feel about that. did he just pull a knife on his wife? Like what? Did he just abduct his daughter? Like I thought it was really pretty insightful on the on guys who write a really silly 11-minute cartoon.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns and myself, Ben Aaron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, You can follow us on your favorite social media at Bald Move. See you next time.
Also, every 10 seconds, it stabs your balls.